This is Talk of the Nation. I'm John Donvan in Washington. Neil Conan is away. This is one of those inevitable things, one of those entirely statistically predictable things. The fact that in our prisons, whose populations began to really shoot up in the 1980s, those at the front end of that wave are getting on in years. They're turning from young men into middle-aged men, and in some cases, the middle-aged men are turning into old men. According to Human Rights Watch, the number of prisoners over 65, and we're talking mostly about men, is rising at a very fast rate, 94 times faster than for the overall prison population. And being old, they're also getting sick and they're getting weak. And being prisoners, they are on the taxpayer's bill for their increasingly expensive health care. It's the sort of things you would expect: Alzheimer's, diabetes, arthritis. How to pay? Well, some prison officials are actually paying other prisoners to carry out some of the health care chores. Others are working on ways to get the older men who have demonstrated good behavior out of prison, released, to make room and to cut costs, which is not something that will necessarily sit well with the victims of their crimes. We want to hear from corrections officers and also those of you who have aging family members who are in prison. Tell us your story. Our number is 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation on our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Later on in the program, the rise in cell phone hacking. But first, aging in prison. Cheryl Steed joins us by phone from the California Men's Colony, where she is a psychologist and runs what is known as the Gold Coat Program. It's nice to have you with us, Cheryl. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So, very briefly, what is the Gold Coat Program?
The Gold Coat Program is a program we have instituted whereby we have other inmates assisting inmates who are elderly and have difficulty with dementia and Alzheimer's disease to be able to perform the daily functions they need to perform in prison.
Are they paid and trained to actually provide health care?
They are not providing health care. Ah. They are providing assistance.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, they are trained. They have been trained by the Alzheimer's Association, the local chapter here in San Luis Obispo, and they are paid, yes.
And what are they paid?
They are paid $36 to $48 a month.
And how does that compare with other kinds of income that an inmate can make?
I believe it is at the higher end of the pay scale, but I don't have all the information on that.
Okay. Well, you corrected me on using the term health care and said the correct word is assistance.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me, what kind of assistance, and as you specified, it's for helping prisoners who have Alzheimer's, what kind of assistance do they provide? And then tell me about the training that they get.
Okay. They provide assistance for the inmates in following a daily schedule, keeping them on top of the routine of showers and appointments and meal times and that kind of thing. If they need help getting from one location in the prison to another, then they'll walk with them to make sure that they don't get lost. They'll prompt them through daily activities. So if somebody has difficulty dressing because they get a little confused about which way the shirt needs to go, then they'll demonstrate for them or help them get the things in the right direction so they can get themselves dressed. Or they will help orient them to different routines in the prison or different procedures. If they need help making a phone call or with help with getting information, they can guide them in that direction. As far as their training is concerned, we did have representatives from the Alzheimer's Association come in and provide direct training to many of our Gold Coats, and then we continue with ongoing training throughout the year. We have weekly meetings where we discuss the issues that arise with the different inmates who have difficulties and how to address those issues.
Can you paint for me a picture of the situation in terms of older prisoners if I could see the situation, in other words, is it overcrowded with older prisoners? Is there a lot of gray hair, and is there a significant amount of Alzheimer's to the degree that you need to put a program like this in place in the first place?
I don't know the exact numbers of Alzheimer's patients in the CDCR system. Here at CMC, we have a number of individuals who have Alzheimer's disease, And within the system, if somebody has needs and there's a certain location that can provide the services for those needs, then they get moved to that location. Here in CDCR, my understanding is that anybody who's 55 and older is considered older.
Really?
Old age, because of a number of factors. So we have a number of people here who would qualify for old age under that number.
Why, I mean, is there a story in why you're old in prison if you're over 55?
My understanding is that, you know, prison can age you more rapidly sometimes than on the outside, and so that's just the number that's utilized.
And does the prison life actually exaggerate or accelerate Alzheimer's? I mean, I say that I'm thinking in terms of how in, you know, the general culture and media we hear that a hedge against Alzheimer's is being actively engaged and having a rich social life and being able to exercise and being able to learn languages and to read and to go to lots of clubs and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So being locked up, do all of the opposite things tend to happen?
I don't know that the opposite directly happens, but there's less of those stimulating experiences and enriching environments in the prison setting. Absolutely. So it may be that there's, because there's less of that, there could be a progression of the illness because of that.
So the gold coats, the men who end up getting these positions of being able to assist the older prisoners with who have Alzheimer's and other issues,
mm-hmm.
are people aspiring to be a gold coat? Is it a tough thing to get to be?
It is a tough thing to get to be. You have to demonstrate a number of years of being discipline-free. You have to have the endorsement of staff who say, yes, this would be a good individual to work with this population. You have to have a work history that reveals or reflects that you are a good worker and that you can meet the demands of the job.
How hard is it to actually do the job?
Well, it's a difficult job from the standpoint of that you have to really be on top of what the needs are of the individuals and know how to assist them and when to assist them and be aware if anything's going on that needs to be addressed to staff and share with them any concerns. So you have to have your eyes open and see what's going on and know how to handle the situation.
And the training tries to take care of, tries to foresee those sorts of situations?
Yes.
Very often people with Alzheimer's don't particularly want to be approached or touched or told what to do or told where to walk, and they may be confused and they may also be frightened.
Mm-hmm.
So in a prison setting, if a gold coat, you know, I just want to understand the picture here. A gold coat may himself be somebody, is somebody with a criminal record and a conviction,
mm-hmm.
may have been not particularly well behaved on the outside,
mm-hmm.
now has to treat a potentially confused and I guess also potentially violent older person, has to treat that person with respect and sensitivity and understanding and figure out how to do the right thing in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
How does it work out?
Well, certainly the safety of our inmates who have Alzheimer's and dementia and that sort of thing is priority. So we do, like I said, screen our gold coats very carefully, and they have to have demonstrated a period of time where they've, you know, shown satisfactory behavior and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we continually monitor how they are doing and how they are interacting with the individuals that they're helping, just to be sure that there aren't any issues going on that we need to be concerned about. So we monitor them on a daily basis. They have learned several strategies for how to approach the individuals with Alzheimer's to get them, you know, to take care of the things that they need to take care of. It might be, you know, working at the pace of the individual, but still sort of gently prompting them towards the end goal of getting dressed or getting in the shower or whatever
mm-hmm.
it is that they need to do. But they have to develop a bond and a trust in order for it to work out well.
What's the track record on developing the bond and trust?
It seems to be very, very high.
Does it take quite a bit of time?
It can take time, sure. And when we have a new person come into the Gold Coat team, then they work closely with the other gold coats that are already established so that they can learn some of those strategies and that they're sort of there in the background, and then the individuals with Alzheimer's and other issues learn who they are kind of on a slower pace, and then they learn to trust them over time as well.
All right. Well, we're asking to hear also from our listeners, and particularly corrections officers and people who have aging family members in prison, to tell us your story. Our number is 800-989-8255. We're looking at the fact that there are a lot of these prisoners. They have serious health issues, and the question is what to do, since, number one, the problem is there. Number two, it costs a great deal to treat them. I want to go to Chris, who is in Anchorage, Alaska. Hi, Chris. You're on Talk of the Nation.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I have an uncle who's he's in the beginning of his 50s, and he's been in prison for at least 10 years now. But that's because he's schizophrenic, and the system here they had let out in the late 80s. I guess he's been in longer than 10 years. But in the late 80s, they let out a whole bunch of people from the mental institution, mm-hmm. and he was one of them. And basically, they would just, drop a bag of drugs on the table and leave him to his own devices. And he's really heavily schizophrenic, and he had some problems.
How old is he now?
He's over 50.
Uh-huh.
I don't think he's reached 55 yet, but, he's still in prison. I visited him this past year. He's in a remote location. Alaska's pretty remote anyway, but the only way you can get to him is to fly. And the other prisoners take advantage of him.
Mm-hmm.
The system doesn't care. He suffers immensely from his schizophrenia and dementia and all that.
Yeah.
And he should have never been. He should have never been let unsupervised in the first place.
All right, Chris, I have to cut you off, unfortunately, because we're coming up to a break, but I do appreciate very much that you took the time to share that story with us. And I want to thank Cheryl Steed for having joined us by phone from the California Men's Colony, where she's a psychologist and runs the Gold Coat Program. Cheryl, thanks very much for joining Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
When we come back, we are still talking about the challenges of an aging prison population and some of the ways that states are dealing with those challenges. And when we come back, we're going to hear about one program that hopes to help long-term inmates get out and stay out of prison. Stay with us. I'm John Donvan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm John Donvan. Tougher sentencing laws in the last few decades left prisons predictably filled with aging inmates, now aging inmates, and states face the usual challenges and costs of dealing with any aging population. We heard in the last segment about a program that helps inmates with dementia and other health problems get the care they need from other prisoners. That is for the inmates who remain behind bars, but other programs work to get aging prisoners out. We're going to hear about one of those programs in just a moment. But first, we want to remind you that we'd like to hear from you, and particularly from corrections officers and those of you who have aging family members in prison. Tell us your story. Our number is 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation on our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Well, joining us now from a studio in Denver, Colorado, is Tim Hand, and he is with the Colorado Department of Corrections, where he serves as Division Director of Parole. Nice to have you with us, Tim.
Thank you, John.
So Colorado has come up with a solution that works to get older inmates out of prison. Can you tell me about that?
Well, let me clarify that in Colorado, there's really two authorities that can release a prisoner from our Colorado adult prison system, and that's the Parole Board or the Community Corrections Boards that we have here, local control. For those that are being stepped down into a community corrections setting prior to their release to parole. So what the long-term offender program does is really anticipates those releases by either of those authorities and better prepares them for that reality of being released. You often hear that 97% of the individuals that are incarcerated will at some point be released from prison.
Mm-hmm.
And we're really focusing in this program on those that have spent a considerable amount of time in a penal system and then eventually move out into community supervision.
So is the point of the program is to help the transition for men who would have qualified parole anyway? In other words, it's not that their age is a factor in getting them the parole through a special program, but that they are guys who have earned parole And now the program comes in to make sure they don't come back to prison?
Well, actually, John, there are two populations that we focus in on. In Colorado, we had laws on the book before 1977 where if you committed a Class 1 felony, you had to do 10 calendar years in a prison before you were eligible for parole. That law changed in 1985 that 20 years had to be served, the calendar years had to be served before those individuals were eligible for parole. And what we find is that many of these, we have currently 34 10-to-life sentences, we have 121 20-to-life sentences, many of these men are eventually going to come out under that indeterminate sentencing structure.
Is there a sense that older prisoners are less dangerous men than they were when they went in?
Well, I think the research does show that age does certainly have an impact on recidivism. Mm-hmm. I mean, in corrections, you oftentimes hear that people age out of crime. They get tired and don't have the kind of energy that they did earlier on in their years.
So does that become part of the calculation here? Look, this guy is 68 years old. He's been in here 30 years, and he hasn't hurt anybody in a long time, and he's probably not strong enough to anymore, and that actually ends up working in his favor on thought of release?
Well, I think there's a number of factors that are taken into account when an appointing or a releasing authority makes those decisions. Certainly, that would be one. I mean, our program is very collaborative in that we have victim services involved and we have the parole board involved and the community corrections involved. I think one of the most unique parts of this program that we actually brought down from Canada and fit it into our system is this core group. And we have individuals that have served long periods of time in prison mm-hmm. that are actually serving as mentors to those that are on their way from prison to the community. And I have 7 men here in Colorado that are very dedicated to the work that they're doing to pay it forward to those that are walking in those shoes, in those steps that they once were in.
So when somebody comes out, they'll have contact and meetings with this core group of former inmates, and they'll get some tips on how to make it in the world?
Yeah, not only do we have that outreach core group working with this population, but we also have these 7 individuals going into the prison. Mm-hmm. Once we've identified people to be in the program, that they can actually video conference or actually physically go to the prison that we've identified for the first step of this process to talk with them really candidly about some of the blinders that occur in this whole transition.
And so, but are you saying that the older prisoners are vulnerable to specific problems? For example, you don't have to be that much older, but there are probably men who did not live in a world that had cell phones. Certainly, men who lived in a world that did not have the internet when they were still free. So, is this something that's focused on the older guys who have spent so long out of society that the reentry is going to be more difficult for them?
Absolutely. We have one individual in the core group that's spent nearly 50 years in prison. Mm-hmm. He's reaching almost 80 years old. We certainly focus our attention while they're in the program, while they're in the facility side of it, on evidence-based practices around in life skill focus, around dialectical, behavioral, cognitive programs. We actually had Dr. Altshuler from Johns Hopkins University help us design some really solid curriculum that does help them with things that we might overlook, just relationships, money management.
Like what? Like what sort of thing?
Well, like you said, cell phones. I mean, these
ATM machines, I guess, too.
Yeah, ATM machines. Shopping mm-hmm. in a grocery store, driving a vehicle. Some of the things that we just take for granted. It's just the way we live out here in society is a totally new experience.
So they
and historically, Colorado has released these individuals without a lot of, in our view, without, and other states for that matter, have released people after 30 years of prison and swing the door open and say, good luck. You know, I hope you don't recidivate.
Yeah. Let's go to Katie in Fresno, California. Hi, Katie. You're on Talk of the Nation, and you're talking with Tim.
Hi there. My name is Katie, and my father is in his 70s, and he has been committed to prison for a minimum of 9 years without parole for an offense that he committed while he was suffering from a mild case of dementia and a major case of depression undiagnosed. Even his prison physicians have said that now that he has been under treatment, his recovery has been remarkable and his chance of recidivism is almost none. And not just because he's my father, but mostly because he is in his 70s and is experiencing some health difficulties. And I, as a taxpayer, feel it would be more pragmatic to have him on the outside of prison where he was a self-sustaining and contributing member to society instead of an expense.
How long has he been in prison?
I'm sorry?
I'm sorry, Kay. Did you say how long he's been in prison?
He was in prison for a brief while, and then he was on community custody waiting for the sentencing, and he has now been back in prison for almost a year.
And what are your thoughts in terms of his being released? I mean, again, this, obviously, you would have any daughter's conflict of interest. I assume you want him out. But are you agitating for that? For example, is he eligible for parole?
He is not. According to his attorneys, he will not be even eligible for parole until sometime after he is 80 years old.
I see. So,
based on the type of offense and the state in which it was committed.
Right. But so here's my question. If you're not agitating for his release, he's got at least 10 more years, it sounds like, in there, and his dementia has been treated at state cost, and you think that in a way that doesn't make sense for him to be for the state to be paying for it that way. But what's the option? What's the alternative?
For us, we felt the best alternative was him to remain in the community custody program. Mm-hmm. The people who were tracking him in community custody said that his behavior was perfect. He was fulfilling all of his requirements in terms of community service and counseling and was doing a lot to help other offenders that were in similar situations from him and also younger persons, ministerial work, and although the crime he committed was very heinous, and unfortunately there was a victim involved, from a pragmatic standpoint, I think that our society might want to evaluate whether our chief aim by institutionalizing these people is to rehabilitate them or to punish them. Mm-hmm. That is my main overarching quandary that I have been faced with my own father being in prison.
All right, Katie, thanks very much for your thoughts from Fresno, California. And she actually spells out the dichotomy, the cultural dichotomy, is it punishment or rehabilitation? And many of us know which side of that that argument we stand on. But as a society, it seems as though the tension is always there. And for that reason, I want to ask you, Tim Hand, about just the fact that through the program that you're setting up to help these guys, it's a program to help these guys. And in a sense, I can imagine, you know, some victims' families, particularly if they're serving such long sentences, it implies that the crimes could have been pretty nasty, that victims' families are not particularly anxious to see them get out, and number two, to see them get out and be getting assistance, getting special assistance from the system. So, you know, talk to those families. Talk to those families now about who may not feel very enthusiastic about what this program's doing.
Well, I think it's important to mention that this is a public safety model. Mm-hmm. It's our belief that if we are very methodical on how we step individuals down from long-term incarceration into our communities with support systems, linking them to mental health services, linking them to, in some cases, assisted living, you're going to be consistent with public safety. The Department of Corrections, as I mentioned, we don't control who comes in our doors, and we don't control who comes out on parole or into the community. But we have a responsibility to prepare those individuals that are going to get released so that they can have the best chance of making it into society and not victimize it again.
Is the program somewhat driven by the need to make space? Or let me put it another way. Is the program somewhat driven simply by the need to reduce overcrowding?
No, I don't see that as a factor. When I looked at the Canadian model, that wasn't what their mission was. I don't think that's our mission either. We're a system that does take rehabilitation very seriously. We have a responsibility for the care of our offenders, to rehabilitate them and prepare them for one day for their release. And this is a unique population when you're talking about individuals who've spent, in some cases, 20 or 30 years in prison and then trying to get them reacclimated into what society looks like today from when it looked like when they went in.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I want to share an email that we've received from a listener. Ken writes, I think that the big question regarding release of old prisoners to avoid the cost of maintaining them is just where will they get the resources to take care of themselves? Many will have no family, job, or retirement benefits to assist them when they emerge. Even young, healthy ex-convicts have a difficult time. So that's an interesting question, Tim, because you seem to be succeeding in setting up a program to help these guys work on the transition. But what about at the far end of the transition? What is there for a 74-year-old man who has spent 40 years behind bars and has no skills and is not particularly in good health? Once through that transition and you teach them about how to go to the doctor and to use an ATM machine and that kind of thing, what's happening to them?
Well, you know, I think that we've had a lot of success around getting them back into the workforce. I mean, there's a lot of emphasis on building their skills, vocational. Some of them are most of them are on SSI, Medicaid, so that they can get out and live an independent life. I think one of the things about this program that really helps stabilize is this placement into a community correction center, basically a residential center, to help them save money, get employment, get some stability around their life so that they can eventually get out to independent living.
All right, let's go to Brian in Sacramento, California. Hi, Brian, you're on Talk of the Nation.
You know, we're talking about the helping these gentlemen, but, I mean, one, these gentlemen do long-term time. They didn't actually get to prison. They've done some really horrible things. And just because, and I deal with lifers all the time, and just because they perhaps aren't a threat anymore doesn't mean they have any right to be back out on the streets again.
Brian, when you say you deal with lifers, what do you do?
I'm a correctional officer.
Okay.
I work in a prison. These gentlemen, I mean, they're talking about costs. Well, there's some other things they don't consider. These gentlemen can't even get generic medicine. The state's got to pay for name brand medicine. And just the whole medical cost on these gentlemen, they get heart transplants for $5. Mm-hmm. And the state picks up the rest of the tab. I mean, the whole thing is you're trying to help these people, but what about the victims of the family? How do you help someone who's had their child brutally murdered by one of the gentlemen? Who's helping them?
Yeah, that was the question I was putting to Tim Henn before, but I do think he got his crack at answering it. But thanks very much. Thanks very much for your call. Unless, Tim, you want to take that on, but I think you addressed it that, at least from your point of view, you're not making the decision whether they're in or out. You're working on helping them make the transition once it's decided that they should get out.
You're absolutely right. And a large number of them are coming out. And so, you know, we can step up and accept that reality or sit on our hands and probably not have a system that is one in which works. It just won't work. If you don't see that this is, in fact, what is going on, that they're going to come out on the streets, and you want the communities to be safe, and you want individuals to get on with their life when that decision is made, you got to put some effort in the front end.
All right, Tim, I want to thank you very much for joining us. Tim Hand is the Division Director of Parole at the Colorado Department of Corrections and joined us from a studio in Denver. Tim, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, John.
And coming up next, malware goes mobile. We're going to talk about new ways that hackers are targeting your smartphone and what you can do about it. Stay with us. I'm John Donvan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.